Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. One of my most favorite memories from childhood was when my grandmother used to take us to the library almost every Saturday. My brother and I became avid readers at a really young age. My younger sister, not so much, because she was younger and she was more interested in drawing and pictures. Today, I'm joined by someone who writes novels and picture storybooks. Rachel Vale is the award-winning author of more than 40 books. We discuss why she chose to write for children and young adults, some of the considerations that go into her storytelling, how she develops the characters in her books, and she does that by getting into character herself. She has somewhat of a theatrical background. And the five big questions that she asks herself at the start of every book she writes and continues to ask as the story develops. So let me tell you a little more about Rachel. Her novels for middle schoolers, teens, and tweens include Bad Best Friend, Unfriended, and the Avery Sisters Trilogy, and the Friendship Ring series. Her picture books include Piggy Bunny and the Big Feeling series, where Rachel explores key social and emotional learning skills. And those books include Sometimes I'm Bombaloo, we talk about that in our chat, and the picture storybook we're talking about today, Sometimes I Grumble Squinch, and I love that word. I've adopted that word myself. You'll find out what that means when we talk. Here's my guest, Rachel Vale. Rachel Vale, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm really pleased to have you. We don't cover many children's books, but given everything that's gone on in the world, you know, it's fun to look at something a little different. And also, the way that you approach your books is a little different, and we'll get into that when we talk. But you've been writing children's books and teen books for a long time. And I heard you say that you thank your brother, otherwise you may not have been a writer. What was going on when you were kids?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I do thank my brother for that. My brother, John, is 2 years younger than I am and a terrific person. He is on the spectrum, and so he has a very different take on the world than I do and than lots of other people do. But two things about that. I feel really lucky about myself. One is that he really wanted my stories. He was such a good listener. He was such a good audience, my first and most enthusiastic audience for storytelling. So he really encouraged me from the time we were the smallest children. And the other thing is, his take on every situation we found ourselves in was different from mine. So I knew from a very early age that the way that I processed was not the only way.
Right.
And I think that as a writer and as a person, that has been hugely enriching for me.
That's a good introduction for you, because as a writer, that's a skill you need to have to understand how people see things differently. So, but what made you decide to write children's books in particular?
Well, when I went to college and hoping to become a spy, because I thought it was really important to have a talent, and I didn't have one, as far as I could see. But I decided, well, you know, if you don't have a top-tier talent, maybe like, you know, sports or music, maybe you have a lower-tier talent. So I sort of searched myself, and I decided good at eavesdropping. So I was 17 and knew that that meant I should become a spy. So when I told everybody I was going to be a spy, which maybe should have been a hint, but not the best field for me, they suggested I should go to Georgetown School of Foreign Service, which is where I applied early and got in, and I was terrified of rejection. So having gotten in one place, I was like, well, good enough, so here we go. And so I headed off to become a spy, and it was really not what I wanted to do, as far as I'm willing to tell anybody, because who knows, maybe I am a spy. Just a cover story. But what I did realize in taking one playwriting class, I had always loved the theater, and I had always loved books. I was such an avid reader that at sleepaway camp, my nickname was Bookworm, which was really cool. It was.
Was it really?
Not at all.
Not at all cool,
but I was a bookworm. What could I do? But it never occurred to me that I would want to be a writer. But when I took this playwriting class and learned how to do playwriting and learned that it wasn't about, like, postmodern criticism, but rather about figuring out who a character is and getting really deep into the character and creating a life that felt true, that felt real, that felt so dynamic to me, and I really learned how to revise. That my first playwriting teacher, whose name is Doc Murphy, a brilliant, brilliant man, said, you know, the first thing you write is boring and a cliche. Of course, that's top of mind. Of course the first thing you write is boring and a cliche. Great, keep going, and maybe by the 50th draft, you'll have reached mediocrity, which is amazing. It's great. You're on your way. And that sort of permission structure to not be brilliant first time out, not be Mozart at 3 years old composing a concerto, but still have something to say, still as proof that you're doing the work of it, was so freeing to me and so exciting that I decided, okay, I'm going to be a playwright. And then when I was working at a theater, I had an idea for something and couldn't figure out how to make it into a play. And it was about a girl in seventh grade who suddenly starts first day of seventh grade and discovers that her friends aren't friends with her anymore. They've formed a clique, and she is on the outside for the first time.
Mm.
And so I just started writing this book without a clue. And so why write for kids? Well, at that point, I was 22, and I didn't know much about much other than what it feels like to be a kid.
Mm. Well, it takes a special art to write for children. And going back to your comment, your nickname about Bookworm, I mean, today that's quite fashion. That's quite a fashionable name. You know, I say now I'm a proud word nerd, you know.
It's like, yes, exactly.
Thank goodness.
It's gotten to be cooler.
Yeah. Well, playwriting is really actually a great start because it teaches you how to set up structure and of course, character development. So, and thank goodness you had a teacher who really encouraged you to keep, you know, writing and writing and writing and not expect perfection on the first go.
Absolutely. It's such an important lesson. And I feel like people have tried to teach me that my whole life. And maybe I'm a slow learner, but I'm still working on that.
Mm.
I have some perfectionistic tendencies and the freedom to say, well, of course it's not good yet. That's the work. And I feel like teaching that to kids, if that message can get through to our kids, of course, most of the time you're going to hear no, or most of the time when you try a thing, it's not going to work. Yeah. That just means you're doing it. You're doing the thing.
Right. And I know you're interested in books about taboos. You like to tackle subjects that we tend not to talk about, that we kind of sweep under the rug. And in this storybook, the reason I said you approach your story a little differently is because you explore key social emotional learning skills in this story, which is such a valuable lesson for the books for like 4 to 8 year olds, such a valuable lesson for kids to learn early on. You know, I had to learn that like way many years later.
Right.
And you still, even when you learn later in life, I think sometimes you tend to fall back into those old patterns sometimes. So I think it's great that, you know, there are stories out there like Sometimes They Grumble Squinch that are teaching kids at an early age, it's okay not to be perfect. So let's begin with the character, Katie Honors, and how you developed her for this story. And first of all, let's talk about the title, Sometimes I Grumble Squinch. Explain that word to us.
Yeah, that's a, I have come up with these invented words for the Big Feelings book starring Katie Honors. I feel like there are some feelings that that we know but we haven't named, and I believe that being able to note a feeling and then name it is a very powerful thing for anybody, but especially a small person, a kid. Being able to say, oh yes, that's what I'm feeling, helps us have some control over it. So that's the idea of these fun words that sound like what they mean. I myself have discovered that a thing that I do is I grumble, squinch my feelings down. I am very proud to be an easygoing person. I really am. It takes so much to get me annoyed or angry. But when I am feeling some big feelings, as much as I have spent my whole career telling kids, it's fine to have all your feelings and feel your feelings, I know I catch myself sometimes grumble squinching my feelings down. Mm. And it's important to me that it's not just a toggle. It's not a binary that you are either exploding your feelings out at every instant, whatever you're feeling, or you have to implode them, hold them in tight. There's a world of other choices in between those.
Yeah. I think it's a great word, by the way. I'm going to use that from now on. I'm grumble squinching.
Yeah, I realized a few weeks ago that what was happening is I was grumble squinching some feelings down, and I needed to talk with my husband and some friends and just sort of let my feelings out. I think so often we try to put a Band-Aid over whatever we're feeling, just grumble squinch it down and put a Band-Aid of kindness on top.
Yeah.
And it doesn't allow us then to work through what we're feeling and why.
Right. Right. It's funny because yesterday I had one of those moments, Rachel, and my sister lives in England, and I texted her and said, are you awake? And so she called me straight back, and she goes, what's up? And I said, nothing important, nothing urgent. I just needed to hear a friendly voice. and sometimes that's all we need
exactly.
Put things back in perspective.
Yeah, and good for you for reaching out to get that friendly voice.
Yeah. And good for her for calling me back too.
Exactly. Yes, what a lovely thing.
Yeah. So let's talk about Harriet, because she's an adorable little girl and she's a nice little kid and she wants to do well and she wants to be so perfect. But she does struggle with one thing, and that's trying to be the perfect big sister. So how did you develop her character? I know that you have somewhat of a theater background. It's theatrical and you like to get into character. Tell us how you came up with her character.
So actually, I came up with Katie Honors a long time ago. When my older son was little, he also, he's a very self-controlled little person. He was when he was little, and he still is as an adult. And I made up a character called Bombaloo. And I said, when I was a kid, I knew this other kid named Bombaloo, who was so crazy. He would do all the wildest things. He didn't behave himself at all. So I made this character for Zachary to talk about, like, when he was, I could see he was feeling frustrated with something. And I would say to him, what do you think Bombaloo would do in this moment? And so we could talk about what Bombaloo would do. He might, like at the doctor's office waiting for a shot, he said, well, I think if Bombaloo were here waiting for the shot, he wouldn't be sitting here nicely like me. He would maybe be knocking over all the things on the counter and maybe push Dr. Carol in her belly.
Okay.
So it allowed Zachary, my son, to give voice to his id.
Right.
And then one day, a friend of mine was saying something. Everybody knew about Bombaloo. All the kids in their social group talked about Bombaloo. And she said, well, yes, my kids were acting like Bombaloo, but you know what? Sometimes I'm Bombaloo, too. And it occurred to me that the thing about Bombaloo is that it's not just a demon other. It's that sometimes I'm Bombaloo is so important. So this sometimes is so important to me in creating Katie's character. Because in Sometimes I'm Bombaloo, she's able to introduce herself. My name is Katie Honors, and I'm a really good kid. She can self-define as a really good kid, even though later in the book, she has a temper tantrum. Mm-hmm. And in this one, it says, sometimes I grumble squinch, and she's able to introduce herself saying, my name is Katie Honors, and I'm a really nice kid. And it's so important to her to be a pleasure to her parents and to her friends. And that's, I so get that. Mm-hmm. I like being a pleasure. I liked it when I was a kid. I still like being a pleasure. And I like it when my kids are a pleasure. But just by being people, my kids and all kids get a ticket to the grand buffet of human emotions. Even when it's not the most pleasant thing for me as a mom, it's not their job to be pleasant all the time or to please me by being easy. They also get to, they need to learn how to cope with the harder emotions like anger, rage, empathic enforcement of their own boundaries. That's what Katie is going through. Like, she doesn't get to sit in her own chair sometimes because of her little brother, or she has to, like, put up with him putting his buttery self on her shirt that she loves. All those things, as a person who loves my kids and who loves Katie and who loves other kids, I want to be someone that they can share those harder emotions with: jealousy, sadness, grief, despair, rage. And sometimes you have to let out all those feelings, your grumble squinching down. And Katie in this book is a little bit older than in the Bombaloo book, just like one beat older. And she's trying so hard to not be Bombaloo that she's grumble squinching all her feelings down. And I think a lot of kids and a lot of adults too go through that and have to find a way to share those other sides, those negative feelings, those very complex feelings with someone they love. Reach out to their sister and say, I just need to hear a friendly voice like you did. Mm-hmm. Reach out to their mom and say, I'm feeling very frustrated about a thing that's happening with my little sibling or with my friend. Be able to turn to somebody and say, share all those complex feelings so that after that, the good feelings can flood in after.
Yeah, so important. And I do love that you are encouraging this in young children. You know, growing up in Britain, I wasn't allowed to express anger. It was, mm-hmm. you know, it was wrong. You know, you have right. to be a lady. And if you're shouting right. at your brother because he's smashed all your LPs, you know, or whatever, right. it's not right. okay. right. But and I do think that it causes you problems later in life, because then you go into relationships with boyfriends or girlfriends, or and mm-hmm. you squash those feelings down. And so it's great that you know, teaching kids at a young age that it's okay to have those feelings, not right. to act out just because, but to learn to right. cope with them and express them in a reasonable way. I think it's great.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have choices about when and how to express them. And I think that's actually empowering to kids rather than shutting them down. What we want to say to them is, you have all of these feelings and you're entitled to feel all of the things. And then you have choices about how and when and where you're going to share them.
Yeah.
You also touched on something very important, that especially girls are taught to grumble squinch their feelings of anger or rage down.
Yes.
And be pleasing. And I think it's a very tight box that girls are put into from a very early age. And boys are also put into a very tight box.
Yes.
They're allowed to feel rage or anger, but they're not allowed to feel like sadness or worry or loneliness or tenderness. And I think it hurts all of us when we're not given access to all of our emotions.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you had to do any kind of research for this story and looking at social emotional learning skills. I know they've been teaching it in schools, especially during the pandemic. In fact, I wrote a script for a major software company that is incorporating social emotional learning skills into their software. So I'm wondering if you did any specific research for this, or it's mom experience, world experience.
Well, there's certainly that. There's a lot of mom experience, and there's a lot of listening to kids who've read others of my books, and I go and visit schools back in the day when that used to be a thing, before the pandemic. But during the pandemic, I actually have been reading a lot about what kids are going through and the stress that they're having and the anxiety that kids and adults are all feeling. So, yeah, I've been actually reading a lot about that and about child development and about what methods work and don't with kids.
Yeah.
In terms of coping with anxiety and stress and socialization.
Yeah. I'd like to look a little at writing the book. I've heard you say on a video that when you start a story, you ask yourself five big questions. So I wonder if you'd talk to us about those questions and how they relate to your storytelling in particular.
Sure. That's funny. Yeah, my big five. I ask them over and over every day. And as the story develops, I learn more and the answers change. So the big five questions I have, whether I'm writing a picture book or a novel, are who am I? And I tend to write in first person, so I spend a lot of time getting into character. So who am I is not just the character's name, age, demographics, kind of facts, although that's important too, but like what's the family structure, what do I think of myself as? My mom is a retired school psychologist, and when I was young, she shared with me the sentence completion questions that she used as one of the psychological tests she did, and so I have made up my own thing called Form to Form a Character, and I have a lot of questions that I answer as the characters in my books over and over, like, when I'm scared, I wish that. What nobody knows about me is when I grow up, I love my mom, but and just sort of do that kind of work of character development for every character in my book.
Mm.
So who am I? And then, crucially, what do I want? So, like, as an actor, you have to enter wanting. So every character has to enter every scene and also the book itself. Wanting. What does the character want? And refining that really gives me the engine of the plot. And then third, who is stopping me? So you need an antagonist. It doesn't mean a bad guy, but it means somebody who's stopping me from getting what I want. And fourth question is why? Why do I want it? And why is the antagonist trying to stop me from getting what I want? And the fifth question is, what's at risk? And figuring out what's at risk gives the book depth. And so I go through those, my big five questions, over and over as I'm writing and rewriting and rewriting each book to figure out the really important questions.
Right. And it's interesting you said that those questions change quite a bit as you go through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I get to know the character, like often, while I'm writing a book, I might think, well, so who's stopping me from, for instance, and sometimes I grumble squinch, who's stopping me from getting what I want, from going on with my day? And I think I started out thinking that the mom is stopping her from getting it because the mom is giving the younger brother what, you know, his way.
Right.
And so mom expects me to be patient and compliant and pleasant. And then I realized, first of all, that's less interesting to me. I thought, instead, it's my brother who I love, who I want to be a good big sister to. My brother is stopping me from being able to be a good big sister because he's being so annoying. and then that put that the dynamic of that relationship because he just wants to love her. He wants to love her with his whole buttery face and hands and mouth, and he loves her so much, and that's why he's stopping her from being able to be patient with him.
Hmm. Love it. I love the illustration in this story. I know you've worked with several different illustrators. I was looking at your past books. You've got quite a few out there, and what goes into the illustration side? Is that a collaborative process for you? Do you get a choice in who you work with?
It's so interesting. Most people assume that the author and illustrator sit in a room together. I have actually never met Haewon Yum. I saw her on a Zoom for the first time this week. I have been so blessed with illustrators. I've really worked with some incredibly brilliant artists. I hope that it feels lucky to them that I am not at all gifted visually. I don't. Some authors write a lot of detail about what they would like to have happen in each, on each spread, on each page of a picture book. I do not. I come from a Shakespeare background. I like to have very little stage direction in my text, and I hope that my text will trigger something brilliant in a really gifted illustrator. So picking a really gifted illustrator is a hugely important step. And luckily, my publisher, Orchard Books at Scholastic, the editor and the artistic director are an incredible team. And they were able to present me with three really, really excellent illustrators to choose from. And I actually, the truth is, I loved them all. But there was something about Haewon Young's work that really spoke to me. And I could not be happier that she is the one who ended up illustrating this book. Mm. Just the magic that she brings to it is very subtle. And I think rewards multiple viewings of the book. The more I look at her pictures, the more I see the subtle little things where the environment, not, it's Katie Honors is wearing her shirt that she loves, her beautiful new shirt, has a rainbow on it. And if you track her shirt through the course of the book, the shirt changes, this magic shirt. So many people have said to me, I need that shirt.
Yes. It has a cloud on it on the front.
Yes. And the storm that happens, and it happens also, her hair changes. And even what I noticed only this week after looking at this art so many times is there's this tablecloth, this yellow checked tablecloth that is like the definition of order. And as Katie becomes more disordered, the tablecloth loses its straight lines and becomes jaggedy.
Oh, I missed that. I'm going to have to go back and look.
Yeah, I just noticed it.
Yeah.
And then there's the final magic trick of the mom's shirt. It turns out is a little bit magic at the end as well, how that comes through. And so her drawings, it's colored pencil, and there's a lot of white space, except for the moment when Katie finally can't grumble squinch her feelings down anymore, and they explode out. There's no white space on that page at all. And then you turn the page, and it's like the movement of it. It's like music.
Yeah. Yeah, if only people really looked at these pictures and just realized how much work goes into them. You're right, it's very subtle, but the facial expressions are very subtle, but they're so expressive.
You're absolutely right. I just love it. Thank you for highlighting that.
Now, apart from the fact that you're writing for either teens or, in this case, 4 to 8-year-olds, sometimes I grumble squinches for 4 to 8-year-olds, what special considerations do you work with? How do you approach this with, you know, the 4 to 8-year-olds in mind or the teens in mind? Are there any special considerations that you keep top of mind?
I do. The most top of mind consideration that I keep, no matter what I'm writing or whom I'm writing for, is to tell the truth, to make it feel real. I want to be really true to the experience. There were so many times when I was a kid myself when I said to myself, remember this, remember how this feels. And I remember writing in my diary when I was 11 that my parents were treating me like a baby, like I was 9 or 6 instead of 11. Mm. And it felt like it couldn't be more different. Of course, my brother was 9, so I assume whatever it was that I was super angry about was that they probably gave me and my brother the same toy or privilege. So I think one of the top of mind thing is to be really true to how it feels to be 4 or 8 or 12. But also really true to how it feels to be the dad in that situation or the mom. And I try to, you know, so I'm still a bookworm. I still read a ton. And so I'm constantly reading, and I'm also still a spy. So I live in New York City most of the time, and when I'm out and about, I am eavesdropping all the time.
Love it.
Listening to families in supermarkets or in on the subway or along the street, and there's nothing better to me than an overheard little snippet of conversation. I think children tend to be poets because they're figuring out language and the world fresh, and so I use those skills.
Yeah. Way back when, I think it was like 2006, before blogging even became, you know, blogging, I wrote a blog post about eavesdropping because you pick up some great tidbits and some great mannerisms,
right?
And quotes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gives you a chance to imagine yourself into a life you aren't currently living. I was in the post office recently, and I overheard a woman saying into her earbuds, you know, into her phone, but do you want me or do you don't? And I was like, oh!
Yeah.
It's just poetry. It's,
yeah.
It surrounds us.
Yeah. It's interesting. In the olden days, they used to have these overhanging eaves, and that's where the word eavesdropping came from, because people would hang out and listen in.
Right. I love that. I never put together eaves and eavesdropping.
Yeah. So it's been such fun talking with you, and this is such a lovely book, Sometimes I Grumble Squinch. Definitely going to share this with a couple of my great nieces. I think they'll love it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for doing that. And if you want signed book plates special for each of them, please message me and I will get that to them. And that's for your listeners as well. If they want to order the book signed and personalized, that's possible. Or if they want to just order it and I can send a signed personalized book plate for them, just to make it to make the kids feel especially seen.
Well, wow, that's a great offer. Thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it. I want to, I'm going to sign off with the end of your author's note at the back of the book. See, I'm a book nerd. I read all of the bits of the book. And under the author's note, you end with, "There's room for the whole of you here, I promise." And I love that. And I'd like to ask you what you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
Well, I guess just that. There is room for the whole of you, and seek out the people who know that and who help you know that.
Very important. Very important. The book is called Sometimes I Grumble Squinch, and listeners can find out much more about Rachel at rachelvale.com. And Rachel, been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you so much.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.